At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of CPC. Thanks for joining us. With us on today's program is Congressman James Comer. He's represented Kentucky's 1st District in Congress since 2016. He serves on the Committee on Education and Labor, the Committee on Agriculture, and he's also the ranking member on the Committee on Oversight and Reform. In fact, he is the GOP point person on that committee. Congressman Comer, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's always good to get insight as to what's going on in Washington, D.C., especially from our very own congressman. You were my personal congressman for several years until I moved from the 1st District. I was over in Trigg County, recently moved up to Frankfort. But I appreciate your, on a personal level, your voice and your leadership in Congress. I know it's a tough place to be for a conservative. You're in the minority, but you have certainly not been quiet when it comes to important issues facing the Commonwealth and facing the country. And people will see you on Fox News and other news outlets weighing in on the important issues of the day, particularly because of your being a ranking member on the Committee on Oversight and Reform. Could you speak briefly as to how important that is, that committee?
I think the Oversight Committee will be the most high profile committee when the Republicans flip the House next year. So if the elections go as we hope, then the Republicans will be in the majority. We'll get a new Speaker of the House. We won't have to put up with Nancy Pelosi anymore. That would start in January of 2023. The House Oversight Committee then will be the primary committee responsible for finally providing some type of oversight and or accountability to the Biden administration. So to be chairman of the, and I'll be chairman of the committee, to be chairman of that committee with Biden as president and all the problems that he's had from the debacle in Afghanistan, to inflation, to the lack of border security, not to mention his terrible policies, his terrible social policies, energy policies, and everything else. I think we'll have plenty of opportunities to message, to try to hold him accountable, to get information, to answer questions that people have about who's in charge of this agency, who made the decision to do what. And I'm real excited about that. The last Republican chairman, when we were in the majority of the Oversight Committee, was Trey Gowdy. So if you watch Fox News, you know who Trey Gowdy was. Of course, he did the Benghazi hearings against Hillary Clinton back in the day. So I'm real excited about it. The Oversight Committee also has jurisdiction over government operations. I'm real passionate about waste, fraud, and abuse. All I see is waste, fraud, and abuse up here, and we're going to try to highlight programs that can be cut and or eliminated. We're going to try to bring to light programs that are being abused, whether it's been fraud, like with the unemployment insurance being such a disaster from a hacking standpoint and things like that. So lots of opportunities in Oversight Committee, and I'm really looking forward to that opportunity.
And we appreciate your serving on that committee. Of course, your influence, you do have influence there, but with Democratic leadership, it is limited. You sounded optimistic a moment ago about Republicans taking over the Congress, the majority in Congress. Since you brought that up, what insights are you seeing, or what leads you to believe that that's going to happen?
Well, the elections a few weeks ago in Virginia and New Jersey, as much as anywhere, showed that a lot of the swing voters have swung back to the Republican Party. If you look at 2020, the demographic that stuck out most prevented us from flipping the House then, prevented the Senate from going Republican and obviously hurt President Trump, were suburban women. And right now, if you poll suburban women, and this is suburban women, so it's not like my district. It's totally, what are their three big issues? Education, and throughout my whole life, Democrats have outpolled Republicans on education, especially with women. But if you'll remember what Terry McAuliffe said, the parents don't have any right in a child's education, and they just cater to the teachers union. We've seen that in Kentucky. The Democrat Party continues to cater to the teachers union. They don't put the education of the child first, front and center. Then the teaching curriculum, the critical race theory, you know, the liberal indoctrination coming from a lot of public school teachers, especially on the post-secondary level. I think that and then the virtual learning, you know, not having in-person school because the teachers union didn't want to go to in-person school because of COVID and all that. Parents are frustrated, especially the mothers. They're frustrated with the quality of public education. They know the Democrats have run the public education system for years and years and years, and they're fed up with it. The next issue besides education, inflation. They see inflation every day, and they realize that this is a direct result of Joe Biden's policies and the Democrat policies. And then lastly, in the suburbs, crime is on the increase. And you've got the Democrats trying to defund the police. You've got the lack of border security, which is creating, you know, droves of illegals coming in. You know, these illegals that come in, they don't end up on the border. They end up in the suburbs and in the cities, right? So the crime has gone up, you know, just a lot there, just in places like Louisville too. So that issue leads me to believe if we can get that demographic back, then we'll be in pretty good shape. History's on our side. And there's nothing I'm seeing out of the Biden administration that makes me think they're going to be able to turn it around.
Very, very interesting. We will find out in about a year from now whether or not Congress will be in Republican hands. So stay tuned. A lot of time between now and then. Congressman Comer, fiscal responsibility is one of your hallmark issues. You have been a fiscal hawk, I would say, while serving in Kentucky in the legislature on many issues. But now you're in Congress, whole different ball game. Much bigger budgets. A lot of money was just spent by Congress with the infrastructure bill. Congress passed the $1.2 trillion. That's trillion with a T. Passed Congress. Of course, you voted against it. One thing I wasn't aware of, you pointed this out, less than 10% of the bill contained surface infrastructure like roads and bridges. And when you think infrastructure, that's what you're thinking, roads and bridges and things to maintain our transportation system, but that really wasn't the case, was it?
No, it wasn't. And, you know, people say, well, where's that money going to go? Well, nobody knows. That's another reason I voted against it. $1.2 trillion, where's it going to go? I can't tell you. Okay. That you got the Courier Journal, Lexington Herald, and I don't recommend anyone read them. And I'm sure nobody that's watching the show reads them, but they're saying, oh, it's going to build this bridge and it's going to build that bridge. It didn't say that in the bill. It didn't say that in the bill. It basically gives Andy Beshear a blank check. He's going to have more money to spend than any governor's ever had on infrastructure. But Richard, if you look traditionally when Congress talks about an infrastructure bill, it's at a time when the economy's struggling and the unemployment rate's high. And because we always need infrastructure, right? So the infrastructure bill, there's always money spent on infrastructure, but an infrastructure bill is that money plus some more, like a plus up. Well, the economy's on fire right now. We have massive inflation right now in the building materials sector of the economy, and there's a labor shortage. So if you look at from a historical standpoint, this is the absolute worst time to ever try to do an infrastructure bill. Not only does this infrastructure bill not have a lot of infrastructure, not only does it have zero transparency in where the infrastructure money's going, it also, you're not going to get a lot of infrastructure for your dollar. For the 10% of projects that are road and bridge projects, we're not going to get very many roads and bridges because the cost of asphalt is triple, the cost of rebar, the cost of concrete, you know, the labor is going to be double. Everything costs more. And you're just making a situation with government spending more money where there's going to be more inflation and more inflation. And you know, it's just it's frustrating as a fiscal conservative to see the money that's being wasted up here. That infrastructure bill not only gives governors a lot of money, discretionary money. Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, is going to have a war chest to be able to spend. And he's already coming out with these liberal programs. roads are racist. This road's racist because it goes through a minority community. I mean, what are you talking about? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And he said, some of these trees that have been planted are racist because they block a view, or they, signify poverty or whatever, just some crazy stuff. So in the infrastructure bill, another example, they have broadband money in there. And they came out with a program last week called Broadband Equity, which means in the cities, there are low-income people that can't afford broadband. So we're going to give them a voucher so they can have broadband, so they can watch Netflix and all this other stuff. They're not going to be running rural broadband in Trigg County, where you're from. Okay, they're going to be hooking more people up in the cities. And that's what the big companies, AT&T and Charter, want. They don't want to have to run broadband in the rural areas. They want to get more subscribers in the cities where they already have it. So the infrastructure bill is a bad bill. I'm standing by my no vote on it.
Now, this is just one of many big spending bills that we've seen proposed. In fact, in the last just a handful of years, it's not just in the Biden administration, but going back to the Trump years, it was about $1 trillion per year, at least the last 5 years of the Trump presidency, maybe $6 trillion. Of course, that was during the time of COVID. A lot of that was stimulus. A lot of it was COVID relief. But this spending, and it's not the billions any longer, but it's in the trillions. Does it stop? Is there a way to stop it? What are we at? $28 trillion. Last I checked, $28 trillion in our federal debt. A lot of money. I remember Congressman Comer was $10 million, and that seemed like a lot. But it's a snowball. Is there an end to the federal spending? Is there a way to stop this or slow it down?
In my opinion, having been here for nearly 5 years now, there's only one way to stop it, and it's both parties. Don't let me imply that it's just Democrats. They're worse, but Republicans spend way too much money too. And the only way to stop it is to pass a balanced budget amendment. It's not going to stop unless you're required to balance the budget. If Kentucky and Frankfort, if they didn't have to balance their budget, the state would have been bankrupt 2 decades ago. Now, you can argue, well, they don't have a balanced budget because of the pension system and all the obligations there. But for the most part, the general fund budget in the state of Kentucky, they have to have the same number of revenue to go along with the number of expenses. If you don't require it, Congress will never do it, neither party. And to me, if you're serious about the debt and the fiscal situation in America, and you're worried about the debt for children and grandchildren, you should be demanding that Congress pass a balanced budget.
Is there a stomach across the states? Because to pass any federal amendment, you need, 3/4 of the states and then 2/3 vote in Congress? Is that so? 3/4, 73/4.
I think that on the surface, people would support that. Yeah, I mean, balanced budget, that's it. But when they see what's involved, I mean, when you talk about spending in the federal government, Social Security and Medicare, which are very popular government program in America and in Kentucky, they account for about 2/3 of the spending. So even if you protect Social Security and Medicare, which you're talking about everything. I mean, public education gets federal money. The road budget, transportation gets federal money. You know, you've got law enforcement, everything. Federal money. There's federal money everywhere. And I think that, if you cut out all the fat, all the waste, every obsolete program that needs to be cut, it's still going to be painful. And I think what happens when you try to have the convention of states or whatever to pass a balanced budget amendment, the special interest groups are going to come out of the woodwork and they're going to campaign and say, if you vote against this, you're going to vote against Social Security or Medicare and all this other stuff. So it's going to be a battle. And, but it's the only way to save our country from bankruptcy, because I can see there's no sense of worry among the majority of people in Washington about the debt. And it's doubled since I've been here in 5 years.
And it's hard to get my mind around. That's $14 trillion. So then I didn't realize. I knew it's been a lot, but I didn't realize $14 trillion.
It was bad the last year of the Trump administration, too. Of course, you had COVID, but hopefully the government's learned from the mistakes. that were made during COVID. You can't shut the economy down. You have to live with it. Hopefully the next time there's a pandemic or a health crisis, we have someone with a little more confidence than Dr. Fauci. So a lot of mistakes. Hopefully, you study history to try to not make the same mistake, repeat the mistakes in the past. So hopefully we've learned as a country, you can't shut the economy down. You can't, print money to pay people not to work during a pandemic. You got to figure out a way to keep going.
That's a good point. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Kentucky's 1st District Congressman James Comer. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky.
Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Congressman James Comer, and we are getting an update from Washington, D.C. Congressman Comer, we really appreciate your time filling us in on what it's like in Washington. I don't envy you. I know the climate is hostile. There's a partisan rancor there. It's very difficult for conservatives to get things done, to get what you went to Congress in the first place to do. Just before the break, we were talking about the runaway spending. You had suggested that a constitutional amendment, balanced budget amendment, would be necessary to accomplish that. And I agree with you, by the way. I want to pivot to something else that would add more money to the federal debt. And this is the Green New Deal. Now, you're the ranking member of the Environment Subcommittee for the past year and a half. So I would guess you probably know more about the Green New Deal than most people do. So what are you learning about this that maybe the general public isn't aware of? We hear bits and pieces. Look, people don't like pollution. People want to be more efficient. We want to be environmentally friendly. But peel back the curtain, take that curtain back, and tell us some of the things behind it that we might not be aware of.
Well, I know a lot about it because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's the inventor of the Green New Deal, along with Bernie Sanders, she's on my committee. So I hear a lot about this. And basically, they're trying to transform America, and they want to get 100% away from fossil fuels. So it's not just a war on coal, it's a war on oil. And you're seeing some of the initial steps of the Green New Deal being taken by the Biden administration in that they shut down the Keystone Pipeline. They banned drilling in federal land. They're fixing to ban offshore drilling, the places where we get oil now. So when Trump was president, we were energy independent, and we were producing so much energy, we were actually exporting some. Now we're dependent. We're dependent on OPEC again. And gas prices are going up to no one's surprise. So the other area is they want to electrify all the vehicles. I don't think they understand that electricity comes from coal a lot of times, but anyway, part of the problem with electrifying the vehicles, one of many problems, is that to make these batteries, you have to have a lot of rare earth minerals. And as we speak, China is going all over the world. In Africa, a couple of weeks ago, they bought a cobalt mine. You have to have cobalt to make those batteries. China has a majority of the world's cobalt now. So this push, this Green New Deal push to get us to from a gas vehicles to electric vehicles puts us more dependent on China. And that's not a good place to be right now. I mean, China's economy is going to pass the United States in 2025. They weren't anything. They weren't even a top 20 country from a GDP standpoint 25 years ago. So their growth over the past 25 years has been astonishing. And they're building up their military. They're going to make us completely dependent on them in this Green New Deal world. So it's a problem. It's not cost efficient. And I think every American needs to learn what it is, because it's a priority for the liberal socialists who are taking over Washington right now.
The word is that the Green New Deal doesn't have votes, at least in the Senate. Maybe it does. And I'm not even sure if it was voted on in Congress. I know with the Democratic majority that does have some movement. Has it been voted on in the House of Representatives?
No, not yet. But, you know, the problem is it wouldn't pass today. It would not pass. But these new members that are coming in, these new Democrats that are getting elected in their 30s and early 40s, they're passionate about it. This is like their main thing. So you see a trend. The future people that are the future leaders that are coming to Washington, they're the younger ones, they're very passionate about this, which means it's going to be a priority once they become the majority. And, you know, another thing that hurts your Green New Deal now is people are frustrated because gas prices and natural gas prices and every type of energy is skyrocketing right now. So the administration doesn't have a lot of credibility to be able to pass a major bill like the Green New Deal. But what you're seeing is through the executive order process, like canceling the Keystone Pipeline, they're already taking steps to initiate the Green New Deal. They just, instead of passing one big bold bill, they're going to do executive orders. They're going to do everything they can, put a little language in this bill, a little language in that bill. And we're going to wake up in a few years and say, oh, my gosh, they've already passed the Green New Deal. And that's why people need to be concerned about that.
You'd mentioned briefly inflation and of course, gas prices. Inflation is increasing. It's very evident. I just learned the other day that Dollar Tree, which sold everything at a dollar or less, is now increasing their prices to a dollar and a quarter. That's pretty significant. It's not a lot when you look at pocket change, but it's a significant indicator of what's happening to our economy. Gas prices have gone through the roof. Would you say that the inflation and increasing gas prices, are these a result of any one of President Biden's policies?
I think they're a result of a majority of his policies, basically spending too much money. We didn't need a stimulus bill in March. And they passed that stimulus bill. During the last year of the Trump administration, Congress really passed too much stimulus. If the government had gotten out of the way, you wouldn't have needed all this stimulus. So the government forcing people to shut down. Initially, the Trump administration made the decision to shut something down. And then they realized, you know, we can't do this. The COVID, it's bad, but it's not, you know, going to wipe the population of the planet out. But then you had liberal governors like Andy Beshear that kept on, and then Gavin Newsom in California. Oh, we're going to keep it shut down. Restaurants can't have anybody in there. And they really got dramatic and overplayed their hand, right? And hurt the economy even more. So, but Biden passed a huge stimulus bill, big giveaway in March. Then they've done this infrastructure bill. Now they're working on this Build Back Better, which is social spending, 100% unnecessary spending. And that's leading to even more inflation. I mean, we have bad inflation now. It's going to get worse. And the thing about inflation, I tell people, everybody says, well, inflation's a hidden tax. It is. And they say it's a tax on the poor. It absolutely is a tax on the poor. You're talking about Dollar Tree going, raising their prices 25%. That's a pretty big hit for, you know, people who are struggling to get by. But inflation, the thing they don't talk about, inflation's great for the rich. If you have a lot of assets, if you have a big chunk of land somewhere, your land's going to ride that inflation wave. So your land, you know, if you've got a farm worth $100,000 and there's 20% inflation, it's worth $120,000, right? That's good for you, but it's terrible for the person who's shopping at Dollar Tree, just trying to get enough groceries and supplies to get their family through the week. And even though Joe Biden and the Democrats try to say they're doing policies to help the poor, they're doing policies that are devastating to the poor. Their policies are going to make the poor poorer and the rich richer. And that's something that people don't think about when they look at inflation.
Congressman Comer, traditionally Democrats have been known as the party to advocate for the poor. Do you think that with increasing inflation that this could pivot, that Republicans could truly be the advocate or known to be working for the poor because of sound fiscal policies?
I think you're seeing more and more people in low-income communities and minority communities realize that these Democrat policies aren't working. So the Democrat solution to ending poverty is more government programs and more government safety nets and more government spending. I think most Republican solution to ending poverty is create an environment where that person in poverty has access to a good paying job. And we have that right now. We have a labor shortage. There's never been a better time in America to get people out of poverty and into the middle class. You look, there's a shortage of truck drivers. We're not talking about you've got to go to college and get a degree in marketing or engineering. Nurses, truck drivers, blue collar welders, you know, you can get out of poverty in no time right now because there's opportunities out there. But yet the Democrats want to continue to pass social programs, and that just keeps the poor. They're afraid to get out of that trap, and it's just not been a good business model.
Congressman Comer, we've got just a couple minutes here, and I'd like to give you a chance to speak on the last topic, and that's President Biden's mandate to businesses with more than 100 employees. He said they've all got to be vaccinated. Of course, that's being challenged in federal court. Does President Biden have the authority to make that kind of mandate to businesses?
Absolutely not. It's 100% unconstitutional. I'm a sponsor of every bill that's out there that's got a chance of passing to say this is can't be done, you know, to reverse that mandate. I voted against the keeping the government open yesterday because I don't want to have these vaccine mandates. We have a labor shortage in America. This is only making it worse. The unions in my district, the unions in Paducah met with me 3 weeks ago. And the unions have always been a Democrat, you know, base. They are fed up with Joe Biden. This vaccine mandate was the last straw. They're done with the liberal policies. They want an America first agenda. They want their liberty. They want their freedom. They're sick and tired of the liberal social programs coming out and the social policy coming out of the Democrat Party. So the fact that Joe Biden's done this, it's unconstitutional. We're hoping the courts will prevail, and I think they will. It's just I think he did it, Richard. He came out and said he was for the mandates for employers with over 100 employees right during the time when he was just getting killed by the liberal media over the debacle in Afghanistan. And I think he just came up with that to divert attention away to off Afghanistan onto this vaccine mandate. So no, he does not have the authority. I'm 100% against it. I'm for freedom, and hopefully the courts will prevail.
Congressman Comer, we are out of time. I appreciate you spending time with us. Appreciate your leadership in Washington, D.C. God bless you. Keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate what you do, Richard.